The gospel reading this morning is found from the gospel according to Luke in the 6th chapter. Glory be to you, O Lord. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you, do to others as you would have them do to you. From the readings this morning, you might have guessed that our focus this morning is the story of Jacob. We're doing sort of a flyover view of the Old Testament and from a couple of weeks ago through the end of July. And in that flyover view, what we're doing is we're sort of retelling some of the stories that sometimes we forget about in the Old Testament and trying to understand how do we see Christ in those stories and what message do we take away for ourselves in those important stories of the Old Testament. Now, this week, we're looking at part of the story of Jacob. I originally thought, I'll do one Sunday on the story of Jacob. And then I realized that the story of Jacob is like half of the book of Genesis. And it's so big that I had to break it down into three parts. So we'll do just part one today. And part one in and of itself has a number of components that I hope that each one of those parts of the story will say something different to you and be something that enriches your week this week. You'll notice in the bulletin, I always leave a little bit of space after the sermon, and that's so you can take some notes. So if you hear some things today that you think, wow, those are really interesting things for me to think about, I invite you to write those down. Well, the story of Jacob is that section of the first book of the Bible, Genesis, that goes from chapter 25 all the way through chapter 36. And then, even though Jacob is still alive, he becomes sort of a background character in the life of Joseph all the way through to the end of the book of Genesis. So a pretty big chunk of the book of Genesis. Now, what we need to understand first is these stories from the book of Genesis were actually written down first by Moses about 400 years after they took place. Now, believing in the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, that to me doesn't say anything about the accuracies of the stories. But what it does say is that these stories were stories that had been repeated over and over and over again amongst the children of Israel. And Jacob's story would have been profoundly important to them because, of course, Jacob's name becomes Israel in his story. He is the one for whom the nation of Israel is named. And so within this story, you need to understand that there's a lot of things that we kind of miss today because we're not in that culture. We don't speak that language. We don't have the same sort of sense of geopolitics. We don't really see the world in exactly the same way that those ancient Israelites saw the world. So the first thing to see is sort of the world of their life. So you see in this map, this is during the period of the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel. And I want you to notice who their southern neighbor is. It's Edom. And Edom is the nation that, according to Genesis, is the nation that springs from Esau, the brother of Jacob. And so in some ways, this story is telling the children of Israel, well, here's exactly why we sometimes have conflicts with those Edomites down to the south. Though, you know, you might think of this as sort of, at times, friendly rivalries. I know growing up, my father was an alumnus of the University of North Dakota, and then we knew some people that were from NDSU, and there's that sort of friendly rivalry there, right? Well, sometimes rivalries can be friendly, and then sometimes rivalries can be bigger than that. And so sometimes the rivalry between Israel was friendly, and at other times the rivalry between Israel and Edom was friendly, and at other times it broke into open warfare. And so we see that rivalry. New Testament connection. The kingdom of Edom, actually, the Edomites eventually become known as Idumeans. You can hear Idumea, Edom. You can kind of hear those related to each other. And probably the most famous Idumean is a king. You know who he is? Herod. King Herod. King Herod was an Idumean. And so we see a connection there with this ancient story of Jacob and Esau and the Idumeans or Edomites going all the way into the New Testament. When Herod hears the wise men coming and saying that they're, you know, that the king of Israel has been born, of course he knows he's not in the royal line. He's an Edomite. He's not a real Jew. And that's part of what causes him such terror. The other thing besides simply knowing this, that when the children of Israel, when the ancient Israelites heard this story, they also were thinking of this as, you know, those things that Jacob got right, we need to get right. Those things that Jacob did wrong, we need to learn a lesson from that too. Now, as the spiritual descendants of the Israelites, the spiritual descendants of Jacob, I think we need to understand what he got right and what he got wrong, because those are lessons for us as well. So think of this, today's discussion of Jacob, as being like a three-act drama. And so I want to give you the background information first, and then we'll get into that drama. Okay, the background information is Isaac and Rebekah. You might remember Isaac was the son of Abraham. So Isaac and Rebekah, somewhat similar to mom and dad are having trouble having kids. And they pray to the Lord, and lo and behold, Rebekah becomes pregnant. And at a certain point in her pregnancy, she's like, what is going on here? This is so painful, I want to die. And God tells her, there's two nations in your womb, and they're struggling against each other. And so these two twins are born. And the first one comes out, and you have to hear a little bit of the humor here, because there's a little humor in this. The first one comes out, and the Bible said, and he's red, okay? The Israelite word for red is Edom, okay? He's red, and he's hairy. He's covered with hair. This is sort of like a storyteller saying, and your great uncle was born so hairy they needed to use a dog brush on him. And what did they name him? They named him Esau, which means hairy. Okay? So he was so hairy, they named him Harry. That's essentially what the story is. The second brother to come out is Jacob. He comes out and it literally says he came out and he was pulling the heel of his brother. So first you have to kind of visualize that. He's grabbing on to Esau saying, get back in here, I wanted to be first. And you'll see that sort of sets up the story of his early life, is this idea that he wanted to be first. But it also is sort of a double meaning. To pull the heel in Hebrew is an expression, kind of like the expression that we have to pull the leg. Okay? So if Chip says something to me and I say to Chip, Chip, are you pulling my leg? What does that mean? I don't believe you. Are you tricking me? Are you deceiving me? Okay? So literally, Jacob's name is pulls the leg. But what that means is the deceiver. Okay? So Jacob's name is the trickster or the deceiver. And this sort of sets up the next part of the story. So the next part of the story begins with something that I think is sort of interesting. It begins with the statement, so Isaac loved Esau because he was an outdoorsman. Okay? He was the guy who, if he's gonna go shopping, he's going to Fleet Farm or Gander Mountain. Okay? That was Esau. He was a hunter. He went out and was athletic and shot his game and brought it back, and Isaac just loved that. Now, I kind of wonder if Isaac was sort of living through his kid, because we never get the sense that Isaac's like that. In fact, I think that Isaac was pretty traumatized by being brought up to the top of Mount Moriah and almost being sacrificed to God, and he was a little bit shy the rest of his life, but he loved Esau. Meanwhile, Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, to me, I think that's the first lesson for us, right? Here's these two parents who kind of set their kids up from the very beginning. Because the story is going to continue with Rebekah intentionally doing things to make sure that Jacob gets the better of his brother. And with Isaac intentionally doing things to make sure that, or to try to make sure that Esau gets the better of his brother. And that sets up our next story. So Esau is out in the field. He's been hunting. He's presumably been working hard. And he comes into the camp, and it says that Jacob kind of liked to spend his time amongst the tents. So he, you know, is possibly sewing up a tent or something, and he's got a pot of stew going on the fire, okay? The pot of stew, by the way, is red. I don't know if it's because he had tomatoes in it or not, but the pot of stew is red. And Esau comes up, and he says, "Hey, give me some of that stew. I'm hungry." And Jacob says, "Yeah, sure, you can have some of my stew if you sell me your birthright, if you give me your birthright. The price of your birthright is my stew." Well, we don't quite get what that means. Here's what that means. In ancient Israel, the custom was that the firstborn got a double portion of the inheritance. So if you had four kids, you divided your inheritance up into five parts, into equal fifths, and the oldest kid got two parts, okay? So if you had four kids, the oldest got two-fifths, and everybody else got a fifth. Does that make sense? However, there was a provision in the law that if you have twins, you can divide it up equally. So the fact that Esau has a birthright means that Isaac had already said, "I'm going to count him as the older, even though he was only a few seconds apart, and I'm going to give him a double portion because I like him." You see the parental preferences going on there? Kind of setting up that conflict in your household? And Esau comes up and he says, "Yeah, give me some of that stew." Jacob says, "Oh, yeah, for your birthright." What's Jacob saying? "I want half of what Dad said that you're going to get for your inheritance in order for you to get this stew." And then Esau says, "Okay, sure, what do I care?" And he takes the stew. Now, what's the message in there for us? I think the first message is a message of immediate gratification. We, besides the parental stuff, it's immediate gratification. We live in a society today where we are convinced that we need everything now. What caused the big collapse of the economy in 2008? It was because in some part, not wholly, but in some part, it's because people had overextended their finances. They'd mortgaged themselves for bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger houses for things that they wanted now and always assuming that they'd be able to pay for them later. Sometimes we do that with, you know, relationships. Well, I want to get something out of this relationship now rather than thinking about how in the future that might play out as part of your relationship. So Esau's willing to get instant gratification, a bowl of stew, instead of thinking, "Am I really willing to give up half of my inheritance for this bowl of stew?" Secondly, Jacob. Jacob's the deceiver. Jacob's the trickster. He tricks his brother out of half of his inheritance. And the question is, have we learned the lesson from Jacob? Are we willing to use people around us to get what we want? Are we willing to deceive our siblings out of something that's theirs? I was reminded of myself with my sister on this account. My sister really was good at cleaning spaces. In fact, one of the things that she does now is sort of stages homes to sell them. You know, she's an interior designer, so she does that. And she's really good at making places look neat. And I recognized this pretty early on because I really had a hard time cleaning my room, especially if there were books in my room, because I'd like pick up a book and I'd read a book and the room wouldn't get cleaned. And like 3 hours later, my dad would come up to my room and say, "What are you doing? I thought you were cleaning your room," right? So I figured, well, I could take advantage of my sister's skill. And so I said, "Danae, would you clean my room And she had a weakness. It was gum. And I'd say, Danae, if you clean my room, I'll get you a stick of gum. And Danae would say, okay. So she like really quickly cleaned my room, and I'd go, wow. And then I'd walk downstairs, and I knew where the candy drawer was, and I'd open up the candy drawer, get a stick of gum, and go give it to my sister. And she'd go, oh, great. And, you know, it was like a big thing for her. But really, what was I doing? I was using my sister, right? If I just would have told her where the candy drawer was, then I would have lost all of my power. Jacob's doing something similar, but in a different way. And, you know, this idea of taking advantage of someone because they don't know any better is something that I think people struggle with in business. They struggle with it professionally. Just because you can do something, should you? Just because someone doesn't know the value of something, should you sell it to them? If you're selling a product that you don't know whether or not it's really going to hold up, should you make false claims? Those are the sorts of questions that we're called to ask as we interact with our brothers and sisters, as well as with the world in general. Third is the story of the blessing. And we kind of mash those two stories together in our reading. These are followed by, there's a space in between them. And you can imagine that Esau has been stewing. For some time, he's been stewing about the fact that he gave away his birthright, a portion of his inheritance, for a bowl of stew. And so their father, Isaac, is getting old. He's ill. He's sick. He feels like he's going to die at any moment. And he says to his favorite son, Esau, go out and get some game for me. And in that act, he's saying, I want you to go get some game for me, bring it back, and then I'm going to give you my blessing. In this society, the idea of giving someone a blessing was really powerful because it was thought to sort of set in motion the future. So if a father gave a blessing to a child, that blessing was really important. We might say, well, what's the big deal about that? I mean, it doesn't really matter, does it? But remember in our series, The Power of Words, we discovered the fact that words really matter. Words within your family, whether you build somebody up or tear somebody down, that matters even today. You're setting in motion the life of a child, the life of going forward of a spouse. It happens within Christian community as well. Sometimes my dad and I were talking yesterday at the Twins game, and he's talking about an incident at their church, and he was saying, you know, sometimes people in church can say the nastiest things to each other that they wouldn't ever say anyplace else. You know, the words can build people up or they can tear people down. I'm reminded of a story I heard about a boy who his father had this pet name for him. The pet name was Stupid. Go get me beer, Stupid. Have you done your homework yet, Stupid? And the father thought that was kind of funny, kind of clever, kind of cute. But that lived with the boy for the rest of his life. He always wondered whether or not maybe he really was stupid. At the same time, you know, you listen to some of the people who've won prizes, some of the people who have been successful in life and helped out other people. And oftentimes, who do they attribute it to? They attribute it to parents who built them up, who always told them that you can be whatever you want to be, who told them that they were just as smart as anybody else, if not smarter, and that their life would be a success because of that. So yeah, the blessing sometimes has real power even today. So here's what happens that you didn't hear in the reading this morning. So Rebecca, remember Rebecca's the mother who Jacob was her favorite son? She says, Jacob, I just overheard that your father has told Esau to go out and get some game and prepare it, and he's going to give Esau his blessing. But you know what? I don't want that to happen. I want you to get the blessing. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to trick your father. I want you to go kill one of the lambs, or a couple of the goats, I think it is, And we're going to prepare them in a special way that your father's just going to really like. And then you're going to go in and get the blessing instead because, you know, your dad's mostly blind. He can't see anyway. And Jacob says, well, wait a second. What if he knows it's not Esau? He'll curse me instead. And Rebecca says, oh, I've got that all figured out. I've made these special gloves and they're all hairy. So, you know, when your dad feels your gloves, he'll know that you're not your brother. He'll know that you're your brother and not yourself. And Jacob says, well, yeah, but, you know, Esau smells different from me. He always stinks. And, you know, I'm a little more refined. I bathe. And mom's got a solution to that, too. Rebecca says, well, that's okay. I've got one of Esau's cloaks. And you can put on Esau's cloak and then you'll smell like Esau, too. Jacob says, are you sure this is going to work? And she says, yeah, get on in there. So he goes in and he's got this prepared food just the way dad likes it. And twice he looks his father in his father's face and lies to him. He doesn't say to him, Dad, I'm really feeling bad about how ill you are. And can we just sit and tell stories for a little while? Share with me something about your life. Instead, he's in there to get something. So he says, here, Dad, eat this and give me my blessing. And of course, Isaac is a little leery. And he says, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but he smells like Esau. He's got hairy hands like Esau. Asks a question. He says, how was it that you were able to get this game so quickly, my son? Here's an interesting answer. Jacob says, the Lord your God allowed me to hunt efficiently and bring back the game. So Esau gives him the blessing. He leaves the tent. I'm sorry. Isaac gives Jacob the blessing. He leaves the tent and Esau comes. And he's got his game prepared for Dad. And he goes in and says, Dad, here's the game. I've prepared it the way that you like it. Now give me my blessing. And Isaac wails and he says, I've already given the blessing to your brother, that trickster, that deceiver. And what does Esau say? He says, as soon as the mourning is over for my father, I'm going to kill that brother of mine. This, for me, is, I think, the lesson. Sometimes when we live our lives deceiving, when we live our lives trying to take advantage of others, when we live our lives in a way that we're not really valuing them for who they are and understanding that God has a place for all of us, that we all are part of His plan and that we are all loved, eventually things will go bad for us. And so Rebecca has to send Jacob away. She sends him to her relatives up to the north. And he's going to go and he's going to find a wife. But Rebecca says, you got to get out of here because your brother's going to kill you. And she has this idea that eventually he'll be able to come back. The problem is that he's gone for 20 years. And in that 20 years, she dies. And all of her conniving and helping Jacob to be a deceiver has come for naught because Jacob is away. He's not going to get the benefit of the birthright. He's not going to get the benefit of the blessing, at least not immediately, while Rebecca is still alive. She's kind of set him up for failure. Which leads to the last part of the story. We didn't read this part of the story, but I'll just tell you a little bit about it as kind of our conclusion to the story. So Jacob's on his way to his relatives. And on his way, he sets up a place to sleep one night. He pulls up a pillow, and he goes to sleep, and he has a dream. And let's go forward. I've got a couple of pieces. This is the bowl of stew, and the next one was the blessing, and this one is the dream. And in his dream, he sees a ladder that goes from earth to heaven. And there's angels descending and there's angels that are ascending on this ladder going up and down. And in this dream, he hears the voice of God. And the voice of God says, Jacob, I am your God. And I'm going to use you despite what you've done, despite the way that you treated your brother, despite the fact that you're a deceiver, I'm going to use you to fulfill my plan and make you the father of a great nation." And Jacob wakes up. And from that point on, he knows that God is real. This is like Jacob's conversion experience. For him, it's no longer just the God of his father, this sort of figment of his father's imagination, but God becomes a personal God for Jacob. He realizes that God loves him. And I believe that this is a moment that changes the course of Jacob's life. This is really our story too, as Christians. You know, our story is that before Christ, we're sinners. We're lost. We live a life without meaning for ourselves and getting what we want for us, despite what that might mean for someone else. But after Christ becomes real, you realize that you serve a God who loves you, who calls you to live a life in blessing others. Because that's the point of the call. When God calls Jacob to be the father of a great nation, he says the same thing, really, in essence, that he said to Abraham. You're going to be blessed so that you can be a blessing to others. As Christians, we're called, we're set aside, we're saved for eternity, but not just for ourselves, but so that we, like Jacob, can be a blessing for others. Now that's sort of a flyover of the first part of Jacob's story. That's Act 1. But in Act 1, I think we find blessing and we find truth. Amen.